Hi, and welcome to the Millennium Live Podcast, the official podcast of the Millennium Alliance. We've teamed up with our great partner Splunk to give you some cutting-edge cybersecurity content. Paul Kurtz, the Chief Cybersecurity Advisor and Field CTO at Splunk, joined the podcast a few weeks ago to discuss his career and everything that's going on at Splunk. Now, it's his time to interview a few notable guests. First up on this episode is Mikhail Falkovich, the Chief Information Security Officer at Con Edison. And the conversation will center around the top priorities for cybersecurity professionals and the industry as a whole. You'll hear how priorities have shifted over the course of their careers, how Splunk and Con Edison work together, AI, and all the innovations and talk around that, and last but not least, some guidance to the industry and what customers and end users can do to keep themselves informed and secure.
Mikhail, it's been a while since we've been able to catch up, and it's good talking to you today. And to just start off, can you give the audience a little bit of background of like your role there at Con Ed and a little bit of your background?
Sure thing. And Paul, likewise, glad that we're able to catch up. And thank you for inviting me for this. So my name is Mikhail Falkovich. I'm the Chief Information Security Officer for Con Edison. In Con Edison, we provide critical infrastructure services for the customers in New York City, specifically electric, gas, and steam services. I've been performing my role here almost 8 years at Con Ed. And before that, I've been working on IT, regulatory, and cybersecurity efforts within the utility industry more than 20 years. It's been an interesting journey, but love the mission. Have a great team of cybersecurity professionals here at Con Edison, where we keep our ability to deliver gas, electric, and steam service in a safe, reliable, and secure manner.
Great. Thank you for that background. And just, you know, for the audience, I've been in the cybersecurity business around the same amount of time as you, Mikhail. Unfortunately, maybe a little bit longer. So, but I got my start in cybersecurity while serving at the White House and was a director of counterterrorism and then picked up the cyber portfolio. Since that time, I've been working in cyber one way or another, and I'm currently at Splunk, obviously, and serving as a chief cybersecurity advisor, as well as what we call field CTO, working with our customers. And it's super great to be, you know, with you here today, Mikhail. I can't thank you enough for being here. And I guess maybe the place I would start is, you know, from your perspective, what are the big priorities that you have there at Con Ed from a security point of view? And you know, how have those priorities kind of shifted, or if they have even shifted over the past couple of years or so?
Sure thing. So I would break it up into maybe three priorities that I have on my plate. One bucket, if you will, is internal capabilities, specifically the ability to protect company data and company assets and the ability to respond to events, to detect and to respond to events. It is crucially important. And data analytics plays a big part in that understanding of our asset base and ensuring that the right protections are applied to the right assets. And then having the processes and automation and the capabilities to, again, to both apply the necessary controls and then detect the anomaly and then respond to the anomaly in an effective way. The second bucket would be collective defense. And the idea there is in the utility space, we like to collaborate with not only others in the industry, but even cross-sector and with the government to ensure that we take a kind of a unified approach to defense, and that has been invaluable in our efforts. And we continue to kind of push for a stronger private, public and public-private sharing of information, which I think is going very, very well. The third focus is continuing changing regulations. Cybersecurity as a field has grown significantly. The risks have grown, the threats have grown, and the regulation has grown and continues to grow. So being part of those conversations about what are the right controls and what are the right requirements to be applied and the right behaviors to be achieved by our organization, by the industry overall, is top of mind as well.
You know, when you think about, you know, the first item you highlighted was, you know, internal. Can you talk about how you might use Splunk and internally to help with security?
Yeah, so Splunk provides us the ability to process a lot of big data, whether it be logs, ingests from other tools, and then analyze them and provide us with both the focus that we need to act on particular events and the automation that we need to help process through many events, right? Or many activities that we see. Additionally, there are multiple tools that have eased our cybersecurity operations center's ability to be effective. I mean, Attack Analyzer is an example.
Yeah.
We're utilizing the both the AI capability, the machine learning capability that Splunk has, and then is able to present to us in a way that we can consume it and take action on it efficiently. That's a tremendous benefit of being a customer.
Just to expand on that a little bit, and this doesn't necessarily have to be about Splunk. One of the things I really think about a lot is, you know, given that we don't have enough humans to go through data and to deal with each particular issue as it arises, the role of automation. Can you talk a little bit about how Con Ed uses automation and its importance inside? You know, it could be use of SOAR. It could be, you know, other forms of how do you converge data? I know Splunk may be a part of that, but just in general, I think automation is a pretty important role in security today.
Sure. And we actually do use Splunk for our SOAR capability. The challenge that we try to solve with that function is the multiple manual steps that our staff needs to perform for specific workflows. It's actually not easy. I got to be honest, right? Regardless of which SOAR platform anyone uses, right? It is very critical to understand the value proposition of the playbooks, creating the proper maps and the proper workflows to automate, and then ensuring that those automations don't necessarily automate in the wrong direction, because sometimes you can automate the wrong thing and your goal is to actually improve the efficiency of your team. We always try to evaluate the workflows that are necessary and then automate those things that are beneficial. We don't want to do automation for automation's sake. So in the end, we have to always analyze which workflows need to be automated to improve the efficiency of the CSOC, because sometimes if you automate the wrong thing, you will actually get more manual work, which sounds counterintuitive, but it's always a balance.
I agree that as much as automation might, is a necessary piece in order to maintain security, you got to make sure automation is, so to speak, doing the right thing. And that's maybe a good way to, you know, talk a little bit about AI. I think I would be remiss if we didn't talk about AI at all. It seems to be all the jabber that's out there. Where does AI, you know, fit for you all? And that can be how you look out from a threat perspective, and it also could be how it works from an internal perspective.
So I'll talk about it, I guess, in two ways. One way is from a tooling perspective, and AI is not necessarily new, right? So even in your capabilities that you provide, you utilize machine learning all the time, right, to give us those trends and kind of, again, help us focus on the right things. The challenge with AI right now is that it has become readily available to pretty much anyone. And some AI solutions are, let's call them, public, and some are private. I think in today's world, whether it's AI for security or AI for operations, we just need to make sure that the business use cases are well-defined and that the data protections inherent to the use of AI are implemented correctly, where we have tenancy for the data that we share with the AI provider, if you will, right? So in those instances where the AI is captured within a tool such as Splunk, right? So the data is clearly within our tenant, but in other cases, AI capability needs to be curated to an organization's users so that the data is maintained within the bounds of the organization. I think it's critical. The risk of data loss and the threat of data loss is significant. And when we think about, let's say, adversarial use of AI, yes, there are cases that worry me, and some more than others. Impersonation is a concern, of course, but just social engineering in general, let's say, oftentimes I hear that the phishing emails are going to get better. I assume that the phishing emails are already the best that they are. I don't think you needed AI for that capability. It's, again, just more available for others where there may have been a language barrier before and there will be less of one now. But our protections need to be built for the most targeted social engineering attempts.
You know, for our part, you know, at Splunk, the way we look at AI is, you know, we want to do it in partnership with our customers. And what are the needs and uses that the customers are identifying? We have a co-pilot that's out there that does assist our customers. And as you said, we've been using machine learning for some time. One of the things I'd like to try to do is backstep a little bit to collective defense. And this happens to be an area that I've spent a lot of time on. In fact, when I came to Splunk, I came from Splunk after starting a company called TruStar. And TruStar was in the intelligence management business, and we really wanted to, you know, promote information sharing. And lots of times I think we hear that information sharing is a zero-sum game. You know, I give up something and I don't necessarily get anything in return. And, you know, I'd like to speak to it. You know, I believe it's actually a non-zero-sum game. The collective, if it's really truly working together, everybody wins, at least in some small part. Could you expand a little bit on when you think about collective defense, you know, how that is enabling the broader critical infrastructure, the broader energy infrastructure, or power generation infrastructure, as you work with partners and just in general, you know, philosophically, how far do you think we are on a continuum of really working together across the sector?
Paul, excellent question. And this is very, very close to my heart because I try to get multiple collective defense efforts kind of moving across the industry. One such effort that I'll highlight is our partnership with the EISAC. So obviously mm-hmm. for different critical infrastructure sectors, there are different ISACs. And I encourage everyone to work and engage with their ISAC for that, let's call it the ground floor of information sharing. But when we took it a step further, there's actually a partnership with the government and the EISAC and industry where there is a cyber risk information sharing program. It's called CRISP. Participants in that program actually do share both threat intel and live analytics or mm-hmm. close to live analytics to get that the awareness across the industry. It's a tremendous effort. And again, it's one of the best examples of both industry to industry and industry with government information sharing. There are other many programs which we can engage or anyone can engage with in the critical infrastructure sector. One such, I'll highlight CISA's cyber hygiene and other services that they provide, more or less free of charge. And that boosts everybody's capability, right? And I mean, it's not free of charge. I mean, we pay our taxes. But the value proposition is that the government cares and they are absolutely supportive of our efforts and specifically within cybersecurity. I would say that lately, in the past few years, the sharing from the government to the private sector has been much more detailed, much more active, and actually consistent of a lot of guidance and expectations, which was less so before. So I'm very, very happy to see that additional engagement from the government to share with the private industry. Likewise, I'm seeing sharing across multiple organizations within the sector, across the sector, and even in kind of like that local and state level. We have partnerships and let's call them trust circles of trust, where we communicate mm-hmm. with other utilities, and we also communicate with our partners in New York City Cyber Command, as an example, right? Those open conversations, or sometimes they're closed conversations under NDA. That's, by the way, the best way to share if you have an NDA with someone. Where it's relevant, we gotta come at this as a team sport. It's not everybody for themselves.
At the risk of having this being cut out from the podcast, there's a movie out there called The Arrival. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's a sci-fi flick.
Yeah, great, great film.
It came out several years ago where, you know, the aliens come down to Earth and so to speak, you know, land in 12 different locations, and the aliens are actually trying to help. And the only way they can solve the problem is by working to save the planet, so to speak, is by working together.
I'll say that there's a concept in the utility space called mutual assistance, where if there's a storm that comes in is bigger than any one utility can handle, or in general that we need to bring electric service back up as soon as possible. So we rely on the relationships we have with the other utilities to actually come and help in case of need. And likewise, we are ready to help when others need. That same concept has now been translated in cybersecurity defense as well. So this is a great time to be a part of collective defense efforts. We're making great strides.
It's super heartening to hear how far we've come along. And the first time I was introduced to the whole idea of information sharing to date myself was 1999 in the wake of PDD 63, where we started trying to, you know, pull each sector together. To wrap up here for the everyday listener who might be out there who cares about, well, how do I improve my own security? Do you have any advice in your role as CISO as to, you know, what helps improve their vulnerability and make themselves more secure? Do you have any advice for, you know, anybody out there today that you might suggest to them?
There are a couple of things that I'll say. Well, and I always try to articulate kind of my cybersecurity strategy as defense in depth and defense in breadth, which means multiple layers of defense and then different controls at each layer. So multiple controls, right? So that's defense in breadth. As we build out those defenses and as people consider the different controls to utilize, I'm a big proponent of multi-factor authentication, and you will see the government guidance actually providing that recommendation over and over again in pretty much any publication. It is a good mechanism, and I'd say don't use it just once. Use it at multiple defense layers within your organization. And the other thing that I'll say is, people don't often translate the corporate level controls to their personal lives, but I would say that even as personal individuals that may be listening to this podcast, I would urge them to think about which services are important enough to you where it will be painful to lose them or to have them be compromised. And I would say, go and evaluate whether you have multi-factor authentication deployed on those services, whether that be a credit card or LinkedIn or other interesting or rather important function that you use day to day. Oftentimes, multi-factor is available, but it's not readily advertised, as I've seen for different applications. I encourage everyone to adopt that policy for those functions that are critical to them.
A little bird told me about a week and a half ago that it might be good to put multi-factor authentication in on LinkedIn. I've checked that box.
Excellent call. I'm very happy.
So, Mikkel, I want to say thank you very much for spending time with us today. And Millennium folks, I'm sure appreciate your time as well. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Paul. And thank you, Millennium.
Thanks for listening. And thank you to Paul Kurtz and Mikkel Falkovich for creating an engaging episode. Be on the lookout for more episodes by Millennium and Splunk.